Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
How are you doing this week, Adam?
I'm doing all right. I had a weird thing happen to me earlier.
Oh, yeah?
My wife picked me up for dinner. She thought she'd do a little drive-by, came by the house, picked me up, and we went out to get a quick bite to eat. And when I got in the car, I heard my voice playing in the radio, because she was listening to our latest episode of The Greatest Generation. Ben, I gotta say, it was weird as hell to hear my own voice in the car like that.
Yeah.
And I think that means good things for our relationship. We may not be as on the rocks as I imagined we would be as a result of this show.
My parents were taking a road trip recently, and my dad said that my mom played him a couple of episodes of the two podcasts that I co-host, and
you're talking, of course, about this podcast and Let's Drink About It.
Yes, and as far as I could tell, my dad didn't seem to have a strong sense of the distinction between the two shows. he said it's very funny, and you and your co-host have great rapport. And then said a string of things that were like references to things that happen in both shows. And I couldn't tell whether he was like actually drawing a distinction about it being two separate pieces of IP.
That's great.
Yeah, such a dad move.
What a great crossover show that would be. Let's drink about Star Trek.
May happen one day. Who knows? We'll have to see if we can get in touch with the people involved.
Yeah, I think we know those guys.
Yeah.
So up on the pod today, we have Season 2, Episode 2, Where Silence Has Lease.
It is the guiding principle of a Darth Vader base. If you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth, you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
So this episode starts with Picard kind of pacing around the bridge, really nervous. And just looking super awkward. He's acting nervous because Riker is doing holodeck with Worf.
And if you weren't seeing what was happening inside, you might expect that this is Riker doing sex practice again.
Right.
But no, he's a tourist in one of Worf's programs, which is basically a fucking deathmatch scene, right?
Yeah, I have to say the exterior sets have really gotten kicked up a notch in this second season. I mean, if this was season one, we would be looking at a very small soundstage with like some gray dirt and some gray styrofoam rocks strewn around it, and a psych with like a way too intense color lit up against it.
Yeah, something that a laser tag warehouse would put to shame.
Yeah, and this is like a pretty plausible jungle with like rusted out ruins in it, and it's like a video game, you know, like they find a weapon under a stair, and then like these terrifying death beasts come out and start fighting them. One of them is like skull face monster, and the other's like a axe wielding turtle. kind of guy.
Yeah, and they are giant. They're like superhero giant, and they're real strong, and they're like winging shit at him. It's great.
Yeah, it's like a pretty kick-ass fight scene.
Yeah, and they're like doing real choreographed fight moves, like compound fight sequences.
There's a great moment where Riker like sees that Worf is about to have somebody come up behind him, and he jumps onto a pipe and like swings down and kicks the guy in the face. And they like barely make it through. And then Riker's like, "Well, that was pretty tough." And Worf is like, "That was nothing. Like, I wouldn't show you what I do when I'm in here alone." And I feel like Riker's like, "Yeah, I feel the same way."
Yeah, that was a moment where I feel like they both picked up where they were putting down. Like,
yeah,
like where fighting is involved, no one can ever know my secret. Where
right.
sex holodeck is involved, no one can ever know Riker's. So this whole scene made me think like in the way that you hear about some people dying by autoerotic asphyxiation, like that happens. That happens, and that'll make the news. How many people do you think are dying on the holodeck due to sex-related deaths? That's going to be the number one cause of death on a holodeck, I think.
At one point, Worf turns to Riker and says that the maximum settings that he likes to go for.
Those sessions are too personal to be shared.
I feel like Riker might as well have just said, "I feel like you took the words right out of my mouth, Worf."
I'm not used to being in here with clothes. Yeah, so that constitutes the cold open, and I think the way that a bottle episode is like a self-contained storyline in and of itself, I think this is one of the rare, if only, times up until now that this was like a bottle cold open. Like, nothing about this has anything to do with the episode to come.
I mean, it plays in a little bit when Worf, you know, expresses some feelings about the adventure that they get into, but not really. Like, you could really have put almost anything in here and the episode would have felt about the same. But it was a fun little sequence.
Yeah, I like the idea of Worf having a karate dojo where he just goes and kicks some ass every day.
Yeah. They show up on the bridge and there's some scanning going on, and the Enterprise has detected an area of space where nothing is detectable. And somebody describes it as like a hole in space. And you can see Riker's ears perk up a little bit. Riker's interested in any kind of hole that they might discover.
He wants to explore all the holes. That's why he's there. He just wants to get up into some warm nebula.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Rocking that neb. They do a lot of like...
I just can never find the neutron star, though.
They do a lot of zoom in, enhance on this area of nothingness. And it just keeps being nothing. So they get a little closer. They start shooting probes at it, and the probes just disappear. And Wesley...
Wesley, the boy.
The boy. Young Wesley Crusher.
My son
suggests that because they know where the probes disappear, they can start to kind of chart the edges of this phenomenon. But it's really confounding them because it seems to be nothing. Like they can't detect any energy patterns or gravity or any matter of any kind, but also it occludes whatever is behind it. So it's just a stone cold mystery.
Yeah, they can see it, and that's the only reason they know it's there. It's not measurable.
Right. And eventually they get up real close to it, and it kind of goes like... And they are suddenly inside of this phenomenon.
Yeah, it's kind of a tense scene, because they weren't expecting that. They stick around a little bit. They sort of do their sensor scan from inside the void.
They're sweeping away on those sensors.
It was unexpected, but they're not freaked out by it at this point.
No.
So they finish their scan, and then they're like, "All right, well, let's get on our way." So they turn around and head back to where they're going, and they aren't going anywhere.
No, like, yeah, they go like a bunch of parsecs.
The engines read that they're working. Their instruments are telling them that they're traveling a certain distance, but they have not left this cloud.
So they, I think they try dropping like a buoy that just pings, essentially.
And yeah, they, this is a great idea, I think.
Yeah, and so they gun it heading directly away from this buoy, and
it gives you the ice cream truck effect too. Like you hear it, and then you hear its Doppler effect as it goes away. Like it gets quiet and warped.
The beacon is in place, sir.
Dead ahead, Impulse Power.
The beacon is falling astern, Captain.
Engineering, report.
All systems functioning normally, sir.
Which doesn't make any sense in the void of space, but I thought it was great sound design. Like, I guess I think the computer is probably providing that for them, because it's it's like it's design, you know. It's like it's something that the human ear can quickly extrapolate what's going on. But no sooner has it dropped out of audible range than it's Dopplering up in front of them, and they put a scan on it, and they realize that they are literally going in circles, but they have no way of not going in circles. They are trapped inside this thing.
Yeah, at this point, shit gets real. Like, they're stuck in the corn maze.
Yep. And they are stuck in the corn maze with a Romulan warbird.
What are the rituals you have in your life? For me, it's a coffee and a dog walk in the morning, a yoga or a Peloton ride after that, a scoop of fiber at night before bed, and at some point in the middle of the day, I take my ritual vitamins, a couple of Essential for Men, and a Symbiotic Plus for gut health. If I can do all those things, I'll feel like I'm doing a good job taking care of my body. Ritual is a science-backed multivitamin with 10 key ingredients. They are rigorously tested and validated by a third party for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. Essential for Men is what I take, and it's a quality multivitamin from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scarves. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off. I've got to fly cross-country to visit our buddy Adam Ragusea today, and there have already been 2 flight delays on the outbound. And as I watch the delays get longer and my travel day get thrown into a shambles, I'm remaining chill. There's nothing I can do but wait, and I'm making my waiting a little better with a microdose gummy. That's because microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help me feel just the right amount of good. We've all seen those videos of people going crazy on airplanes. Well, this isn't that kind of dose at all. This is the kind of dose that makes a long delay at an airport feel a little more bearable. There are all kinds of other uses, and if you've ever considered microdosing, I'd encourage you to give the products from Lumi Labs a try. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com using the promo code SCARVS. Now, these products are available nationwide, and that URL is microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS, and with that, you can save 30% and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com, and the promo code is SCARVS.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
So they do that thing where they detect a cloaked ship, and then immediately they jump to the conclusion that it's Romulans.
They never jump to the conclusion that it might be Klingons.
No. No, they don't. So this bird of prey uncloaks. This bird of prey decloaks, and it just lights him up. Like, it starts shooting right at him immediately.
Yeah.
And the Enterprise returns fire and blows it up, like, real easily.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be nice if the Romulans were that easy to take down?
And immediately this, like, raises Picard's suspicions. He's up out of his chair, and he's like, well, that was too easy. What the hell?
Doesn't make any goddamn sense.
No. No, so they recover from that strange situation, and a moment later, another ship appears, and it's a ship that looks just like the Enterprise.
NCC-1305-E. It's the Yamato, our sister ship.
You familiar with the name Yamato?
I know a guy named Andrew Yamato, but that's my only association with it other than the sister ship of the Enterprise.
Well, I have this down cold. Like, I didn't even do research on this. But the Yamato was a battleship built by the Japanese Navy during World War II.
Cool.
It had the largest guns of any warship of its time. Like, it Whoa. Was stacked. And it was so stacked that it made such a tasty target for the Allies that they just concentrated all of their fire onto it. And the captain of the Yamato ended up grounding the ship into an island to keep it afloat and to use it as a platform for these giant guns. So, like,
Damn.
Rather than sinking the ship, he's like, nuh-uh. Like, we're keeping these guns up out of the water and we're going to keep using them. So
that's a pretty badass move.
Yeah, great name for a ship with that kind of history, I think.
Yeah. Well, so so the Yamato is just sitting there, not replying to hails. And Riker and Worf go beam over to poke around, and it's a ghost ship. There's nobody on board.
It's a mini Dustbuster Club too, right?
The Dustbuster auxiliary.
Yeah. The Dustbuster cocktail kit.
Yeah. They start, like, tricordering, and they realize that it's, like, not quite made out of the same stuff that the Federation makes ships out of, and they think it's, like, a little bit more advanced, even, maybe.
Well, they hit up O'Brien before beaming over, and they're like, hey, put us on the bridge. We don't know what's over there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I should
And the idea is like, you know, they aren't getting any life signs over there, but there could be. So yeah. let's get the jump on them by beaming up to the bridge.
Let's be careful.
And O'Brien's like, yeah, I got that. It's not a big deal at all. So he beams him over, and sure enough, they end up in different parts of the ship, way away from the bridge.
Yeah. And it's creepy as fuck. Like, there's great sound design here where I feel like this is, like, the kind of sound design where you're like, is this a sound that they are hearing, or is it, like, creepy music, or kind of a combination of the two?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's effective.
It's lit all strange. It's got that haunted house vibe of a place that looks sort of familiar, but things are off about it.
Yeah, I think they changed the color of the carpet or something. So there's just, like, lots of little things where you're like, it feels a little wrong.
Yeah.
And eventually there's a scream, and Riker comes running, and Worf comes running the other way. And briefly they think that they're going to accidentally shoot each other. But I guess Worf heard Riker and Riker heard Worf. So they set off to kind of explore around this ship, and it just doesn't make any sense. Like, they'll get off the turbo lift where they think one thing is going to be and it's another.
It's a corn maze inside a corn maze.
And eventually they're on the bridge, and they open one of the doors, and they're, like, looking in at another bridge, which is a really well done effect. Cause I don't think that they built two bridges just for this one scene. So I don't quite know how they even achieved this, but it looks great.
Yeah. It definitely looks real, and it's not like the two bridges are parallel side by side. Like, you'll open up the bridge you'll open up the turbo lift door to the, like the battle bridge, for instance, and it'll open up the conference room door. Like,
yeah,
things aren't lining up. Like, even if you were trying to put two bridges together, they wouldn't line up like this.
Yeah, and so Worf and Riker are, like, getting confused. They're like, wait, if you go in there and I stay here, then you'll be on the bridge, but I'll be on the bridge. and what does that mean, man?
Yeah, and they, like, Worf will be in one bridge looking into the other, and he'll see himself. Like, they're seeing each other. Like, it's a real mindfuck, I think.
Yeah.
And Worf is getting pissed. Like, yeah. He's not handling this well at all.
No, this is
he's
not
kind of his... falling apart here.
Yeah. You know, he likes an enemy that he can see and axe to death.
Right. So part of the problem is they've lost communication with the Enterprise. And meanwhile, back on the Enterprise, Picard is becoming flustered because he can't beam him back. O'Brien can't get a transporter lock. Picard wants to get him home because it looks like there's an opportunity to escape this thing. Like there's
a rift opens in the side of the nothing, and there's stars visible on the other side.
I mean, we're back on the Enterprise bridge, and something is out of place, something strange, and that person is, as a man will know, is Haskell, who's sitting at the con.
Yeah.
Who's a big red shirt.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
So the tease is like these holes are opening up, but Picard's not going to leave Worf and Riker on the Yamato. Like, he can't just... He's got a chance to leave the cloud, and he's not taking it.
So they just barely get their transporters back in time because the Yamato starts to, like, fade out of existence, and they manage to bring Riker and Worf back aboard, like, just before it blinks out entirely, and they start heading for one of these exits, and then it closes, and then another one reopens, so they, like, point the ship at that and try and go for that, and they keep, like, increasing the amount of warp speed they're going to use to get to this exit, and it's a shell game. There's no actual escape available to them,
and they're starting to articulate that they're being fucked with at this point. Like,
yeah,
like what the hell?
Yeah, Picard realizes that there is a mischievous intelligence behind this shit, and I feel like I would have assumed that it was Q if I was in Picard's shoes.
Oh yeah, that makes a lot of sense. This seems very Q-ish.
Yeah, this seems Q's like something MO. Q would do.
Except Q would want to take the credit. Like, he's got the vanity aspect. Yeah. I think he'd reveal himself before now.
So I think it was maybe Pulaski that suggests that they are like rats in a maze. And that sort of triggers the appearance of this entity called Nagilum, which is looks like they've like cut holes for eyes, a nose, and a mouth in like a swim cap and stretched it against the guy's face.
Yeah, it looks like if someone went Texas Chainsaw Massacre with the chaotic bro guy and just pulled his face over a regular face.
Yeah.
That's what he looks like. It looks real warped and weird, like a circus mirror depiction of a person.
Yeah.
Of a person's face.
But it's just a giant face that's like floating in the void that's visible on their view screen.
Yeah.
And I think Geordi's got it right when he says that guy's super ugly.
Sensors show nothing out there. Absolutely nothing.
Sure is a damned ugly nothing.
Yeah, the blind guy says that.
Yeah, taking a card out of the microbrain playbook.
Yeah.
Geordi, in making first contact with an alien intelligence, goes, ugly motherfucker!
Yeah, real tasteful explorers, this crew.
But Nagilum is definitely just running some experiments on them.
He's got some questions like what's that? And he's sort of looking at Pulaski. You're different. You're not like the rest of this bridge crew. So he basically openly questions the gender bias of the bridge crew appointment because he says one of these things is not like the other.
Yeah.
And then Pulaski explains that she is a female. The gender counterpoint to the male crew people. And she goes on to explain that, well, that's how we procreate. You get one of me and you get one of them and we make babies.
Yeah.
And Nagilum's like, cool, let's see.
Let her rip.
And Pulaski's like, for a lot of reasons, that's not going to happen. And Picard's like, we don't do shit like that, man.
We're running a classy operation here. I mean, I don't know what Riker does in his spare time, but this is a...
Yeah. Picard's like, we don't do that in public. Riker's like, speak for yourself. So it's a little contentious.
Yeah. But Nagilim basically announces that the thing that he's most curious about is the fact that the people aboard this ship are limited in that they will eventually cease to exist. So because he wants to explore this idea further, he is going to cease to exist anywhere from a third to a half of the crew over the next little bit. And Picard's not having it. He's like, well, if that's what you're going to try and do, we're going to blow the ship up.
Right. And we know Nagilim is serious about this because he looks at Haskell at the con, and Haskell gets into convulsions and spazzes out in the middle of the bridge. And
it's a really intense performance.
Yeah. Nagilim's like, well, there's basically a couple hundred ways to die. I'd like to see what all of those are like.
Yeah. He's
starting with poor Haskell.
He doesn't break into his like fake Rasta patois and go, there's 6 million ways to die.
Riker's like, I volunteer to die by sex. Can I just volunteer for that?
Yeah.
I got dibs.
Riker's like, you know, I'm very familiar with the little death, but what's up with that big death?
Just kept talking in one long, incredibly unbroken sentence, moving from topic to topic so that no one had the chance to interrupt. It was really quite hypnotic.
Picard decides to blow up the ship again. For the second time in 2 seasons, he goes to engineering with Riker and is like, this ship will not stand. This will not stand, man. Let's blow up the ship rather than watch half of the crew die.
And it seems like they've made it slightly more complicated to set the ship to blow up, but not much. Like, they basically go, blow up the ship. Yeah, I agree. How much time do we want to set? 20 minutes? Sounds good.
That is such, like, that scene and the scene before it are just outrageous to me. So they have a meeting in the conference room to discuss what their plan of action is. And Worf is like, this guy promised us like between 30 and 50% casualties. And he's like, that's well within the acceptable limits. I have so many questions. What are the acceptable limits?
Like, where is that in the manual?
Yeah, like, are those Worf's personal limits for casualties? Like, that's an amount he can live with? Because I have a really hard time believing that a Federation ship is pretty okay with half of their crew dying on a given mission.
Yeah.
In a circumstance like this. I thought that was unbelievable to me.
That's not even how many people died in D-Day, right? I mean, like, that's an insanely high margin.
And of all people, like, Worf is the one that goes like, yeah, let's not fight this. Like, let's let him kill half of them. Let's let him kill half of the people on the ship. I think that'll work for me.
Well, you know, Worf's got he's looking at his odds. He's like, hey, this might be a real honorable death for me. So how can I look askance at this opportunity?
So Picard is like, yeah, we're going to blow up the ship. He grabs Riker. They go to engineering and they're trying to work out the length of time that's an amount of time that, you know, efficiently blows up the ship without too much time going by. Like, we don't want to set the destruct sequence for a couple of days from now because this experiment's going to begin at any moment and it's going to get ugly and stinky around here real fast.
Yeah, you want to be able to record your Tasha Yar hollow eulogy. But
yeah, and they're like, well, we need to give some people a respectful amount of time to sort of take care of their affairs. Riker's like, 20 minutes. How's 20 minutes sound? Picard's like, sure, done. And that is literally the only conversation about it. Like, how much time? How about 20? All right.
Good enough for me.
Wow.
That's a nice round number.
I thought that was pretty cold. 20 minutes. Yeah. What do you think the line for the holodeck is like after that word gets out?
Yeah.
You got 20 minutes to burn, man. Probably going to do it in there, right?
Mm-hmm. So Picard retires to his quarters and is having a nice hang sesh, listening to some classical music, and Troy and Data come in and basically get real cash with the captain and start questioning his wisdom in setting this self-destruct order. And it's like a pretty intense conversation until Picard realizes that something's up with them. And he realizes that they are, in fact, also illusions presented by Nagilim to kind of toy with him and experiment with his reasoning. So,
yeah, he knows something's up because they're calling him by his first name.
Right.
And they're being very emphatic. They're like, don't do it. Our lives have worth. You're right. Making the bad choice here. And that's something that's pretty out of character for both of them.
Right. And it's not like they don't ever disagree with him, but the way they're disagreeing with him is weird.
Yeah. So Picard gets on the horn with the computer and he's like, hey, where's Data? And he's looking right at Data. The computer's like, Data's on the bridge. And then he gives Data and Troy the fuck yeah look, like, uh-huh.
I'm on to you assholes.
Yeah, try again. And so they just sort of turn into a cloud and disappear.
Yeah, and you wonder why Nagilim didn't rig up the computer to perpetuate his illusion, but I guess it's all part of that experiment that this all-powerful being is doing.
I wonder if Q knows about Nagilim.
I mean, he must, right?
I wonder if they're related. Boy, I think Q really lucked out in the looks department.
Yeah.
That's the case. Nagilim is like the inbred Q that they keep out in the barn of the continuum.
So Picard goes back to the bridge and the void is just like suddenly gone and they're looking at stars on the view screen and the ship is still counting down and it gets damn close to going off when Picard tells the computer to stand down the self-destruct order. The computer asks if Riker agrees. Riker kind of overdoes it in agreeing.
Sir William Teague, do you concur?
Yes, absolutely. I do indeed concur wholeheartedly.
Auto-destruct. Canceled.
Simple yes would have sufficed, number one.
This is a really, like,
he's
weird...
very emphatic.
Yeah, weird moment to, like, drop in, like, a kind of a comedic take.
It's like, yeah, oh. Seconds away from certain death.
Yeah. But I guess Picard was kind of waiting it out to see if the void just randomly reappeared, because it's sort of like all you can expect at this point from Nagilim.
And it seems too easy, right? Like the thing that gets Nagilim to give up is Picard kicking fake Troy and fake Data out of his quarters. Like at that point, they're out of the cloud. That does it.
Yeah. And so they head off and continue whatever it was they were doing. And Picard goes into his ready room and... on the laptop screen, Nagilim appears and does a kind of classic, super condescending, advanced alien assessment of human culture, which...
They should be used to this by now.
...strongly echoes some of the things that Q said in episode one.
Right.
Picard points out to Nagilim that is curious about the universe and the races in it, and that's why it was running that experiment, and that's sort of the Enterprise's raison d'etre, so they are not so disalike, him and he.
Clearly.
And that's it.
Yeah, that's the whole thing was one big charade.
It's a really simple episode. There's not really a B storyline of any kind. It's just this happens, then this happens, then this happens. They try this, it works, and they're done.
Yeah, I feel like if you're writing an episode like this, this is like the ship is stuck in quicksand episode. There's there's dozens of different versions of this story, but the ship gets stuck. And they got to get out.
And it's like, it's the second episode in a row that's we encountered a weird object in space that's making shit crazy on the Enterprise.
Yeah, it's less character development and more conflict with exterior motivations.
External threat thing, yeah.
External threats is a more grammatically correct way to say what I said.
That it is, Adam. That it is.
I'm the inbred host outside in the Continuum's barn. Ben, did you come across a drunk Shimoda in this episode?
Incredible. Drunk Shimoda!
I was going to say it was Dr. Pulaski, but I think it's actually Data. Because when Pulaski comes up on the bridge when they're first scanning at this thing before they get enveloped. Pulaski is just being like brazenly bigoted about Data. I mean, like, I think this is the episode where she calls him Data a couple of times, and he's like, that's not my name. Data is my name. Data is something else. And she's a real stone cold, mean spirited jerk.
She's got racist grandma vibes.
Yeah, seriously, she's real set in her ways, as they say. And there's just a scene on the bridge where she's like slinging insults at him, and they just keep cutting to Brent Spiner, kind of like tilting his head, clearly hearing it, but choosing not to say anything back. And I just thought it was so funny. It was a great little performance, and I felt like Jim Shimoda's a fun-loving dude. He's not like gonna engage people by stooping to their level. He's just gonna, let them bury them, dig their own grave.
Yeah, it's just about rising above it, having a good time.
Yeah, making a Jenga set out of the isolinear chips,
Trunk Shimoda is named after our favorite character from episode 2. We assign Drunk Shimoda as an award for someone in the episode who is having the most fun or doing something really strange or weird. My Drunk Shimoda nomination is for Haskell, our red-shirted bridge crewman who we meet for the first time and then say goodbye to moments later. I feel like if you're the actor playing Haskell, and I mean you're a bit actor, like he's got his one line, like it's got to be so exciting. So you read your part in the script, you see, oh shit, like it's just one line, but then you see that you have a really awesome death scene where you just get to overact the shit out of it.
Yep.
I feel like, oh, what a great day on the set for him. Like he gets to fake his own death 10 times.
Strongly disagree with something that the captain says and then buy the farm in a big way.
Yeah, great day for him. Like I feel like you're watching a man die on screen, but feel like he's having a lot of fun in the process. So
yeah,
for that reason, Mr. Haskell is my Drunk Shimoda.
Nice one.
Damok Angelad at Tanagra. Damok Angelad at Tanagra.
What do we have coming up on our next episode?
Our next episode is another real iconic one. It's Elementary, Dear Data. Pretending to be Sherlock Holmes, Data
Veto.
Data uses the holodeck to solve a mystery that threatens Dr. Pulaski's life. How can you veto this one, Adam?
Oh God,
do you seriously want to veto right now?
The fucking pipe, really? The Sherlock Holmes thing?
But it's like, Moriarty, he's got the like lever in the holodeck simulation of old London that somehow like makes the ship rock back and forth.
Look, I don't remember any of this, okay? All I have to go on is this pipe and it's Sherlock Holmes. Look, I'm not going to veto, but I mean, it's only because the seasons are so long. I feel like I should keep that in the back pocket.
I'm as close to doing it
as ever.
But I'm glad I was able to talk you out of it, Adam, because I would never veto this episode.
Never, ever.
It's an episode that gets called back much later in the series in a way that I think is really interesting. So it would be a real shame to just walk past this one.
All right, let's do it.
You know, I think that one of my favorite things about doing this podcast, Adam, is getting to interact with all of our listeners on Twitter. They're using the hashtag GreatestGen to send us mock-ups of t-shirt ideas that we come up with from episodes and continue jokes, point out jokes that we missed, which is, I always feel like there's so much comedy that we pass over in each episode that people are like, hey, why didn't you guys talk about this? And I'm like, oh my God, we're insane for not having talked about that. So that's really fun. Go on Twitter, use the hashtag GreatestGen and joke around with us. You could follow Adam at CutForTime. And you can follow me at Benjamin R. AHR. And you can also go to gach.biz and send us an email from there. I think it's drunkshimoda@gmail.com.
That's right. Thanks as always to Dark Materia, who is the creator of our theme music and our interstitial music. You can find the Picard song just about everywhere online.
Yeah, just Google it.
All right. I think that's going to do it for us. Good pod, Ben.
Good pod, Adam. We will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and, you know, a passable at best episode of The Greatest Generation.
We're doing our best.
Make it so. Jean-Luc Picard.